This is Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and this is the Right Now Mastermind class for February 2013. I'm delighted to welcome Mandy Stanley, who's going to be talking about speaking and how you can stay booked as a speaker. Let me tell you a little bit about Mandy. With more than 17 years of experience on the seminar circuit, certified speaking professional Mandy Stanley works primarily with business leaders who want to boost their professional image and with people who want to be better speakers and writers. She has traveled throughout North America entertaining and educating more than 41,000 seminar participants, totaling 3,900 platform hours. Her feet really hurt. Some of her repeat clients include Campbell's Soup Company, McDonald's USA, Godiva Chocolate, and the National Football League. In 2003, Mandy was designated a CSP, or a Certified Speaking Professional. Fewer than 9% of all worldwide speakers have earned this designation. And Mandy is the first Mississippian in history to receive this honor through the National Speakers Association. Mandy is the author of the No Panic Plan for Presenters, an A to Z checklist for speaking confidently and compellingly anywhere, anytime, which was named a finalist in the career category at the Independent Book Publisher Awards in New York this June. She's here today to share how we as writers in any genre can showcase our talents through speaking engagements and how we can adapt a four-pronged marketing plan for securing book signings, readings, and speaking engagements. Wow, I'm excited. Welcome, Mandy.
Thank you, Rochelle.
I'm glad to have you with us. And anybody, if you want to mute your individual line, if you think it's going to be loud and your dogs are going to bark like mine are barking, go ahead and push star six. So, Mandy, I want to start with the question you probably get a lot. How do you get started in the speaking business? How do you actually become a professional speaker?
Well, and first, I don't know about you, but I had absolutely no idea there were actually people who traveled around and made their living as professional speakers. I mean, they get paid to talk, so who knew? And if I had known that was a career choice in college, that would have changed a lot of things for me. But just as we as writers will have people maybe look at our books or maybe come by a book signing table and pick up our book and flip through it and then put it down and say something like, you know, I've been meaning to write a book, or, you know, I have a great book inside of me, too. I just haven't made time or gotten around to putting it on paper yet. It's the same with speaking. I do constantly have people come up to me and say, you get paid to talk to people? Well, that must be the best job ever. I could do that. In fact, could you teach me how to do that? And, of course, we as writers on the line and listening today know that getting paid to talk is about as easy as getting paid to write. There's a whole lot that goes on behind the scenes and ahead of time before you have a fruitful career in doing either speaking or writing. So what I'll do, and I promise, Rochelle, I'm not going to bore everyone with my personal story, but what I'll do is give you about a two-minute history or a Reader's Digest version of my path to speaking and writing as a career, and then we'll let that lead on to some applicable takeaways for the folks who are participating today, because here's what I've learned as a speaker for the past 17 years. The backdrop for this is Kansas City in the early 1990s. My husband, Bob, and I moved from Dallas to Kansas City, and I had to find a job. So I started doing it the old-fashioned way, the way we all did back in circa 1991-93. I looked at the classified section of the Sunday paper, the Kansas City Star, and there was an ad for a seminar firm in Kansas City. And for those of you who may not realize this, and again, I didn't either, Kansas City is the seminar capital of the world. At the time, four of the big five seminar firms were located in Kansas City. The only one that wasn't was Career Track in Denver, but the rest were in Kansas City. And so I auditioned. They were running an ad for a Grammar for Grown-Ups speaker. And I auditioned for the job as an English and liberal arts major. I met the qualifications they had listed. And lo and behold, I got the job. But I was so young. In fact, I would be coming on board as their youngest speaker. And for most speakers, speaking is usually their second or third career choice. They've established themselves as experts in a certain industry or area. They are considered subject matter experts, and that is why they are able to make a living speaking on a certain topic. Now, for me, I got the job simply because I was able to diagram sentences in front of an audience. That was about it for me. And I was actually too young to work for them. I was only 24 at the time. And I had to wait 6 months for my 25th birthday so that I would be old enough to rent a car and travel for it. So I had a lot of time to prepare for this Grammar for Grownups class. And I spoke and traveled for this company for years and years, and it was a wonderful experience. I got to see parts of our country that I never would have otherwise. And at the time, just for those of you who can get a little taste of this, we did 5 cities in 5 days. So I might fly out of Kansas City on a Sunday evening and hit Denver Monday, Salt Lake City Tuesday, Boise Wednesday, Portland, Oregon Thursday, and wrap up in Seattle Friday, fly back home and turn around and do it all again the next week. So it was grueling travel. And did that for years and thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, here's where we get to the speaking as writing and my motivation. My husband had an opportunity with a job opening in Memphis. So we moved from Kansas City to Memphis. And at about that same time, I found out I was expecting my first baby. And we had been married 11 years at the time, and this was big, good news for us. This was a long-awaited pregnancy, a much-anticipated baby, and I knew I could not continue the 5 cities and 5 days travel routine. I would never be home to see the baby, and I'm sure an infant really appreciates a mom who doesn't just check in on Saturday. So I had to make a change. So I finished my contract with this company, and I launched my own seminar firm about the time. In fact, it was the same year I had my baby. Now, I'd also had enough veteran speakers and moms speak wisdom into my life. As an older mother, I did not want to miss a minute of this infant's baby years. And so I knew I wanted to take off and not travel and not speak at all for at least 8 or 9 months after my son was born. Now, the problem is 8 or 9 months away from the seminar circuit, people forget about you. And it would be a death sentence to my speaking business because I didn't want to have to start over with 0 people on my engagement calendar. So one of the smartest things that I did, and this is what I'm going to share with everyone on the call today, is before I gave birth, I hired a business consultant from La Jolla, California, to help me with a game plan to keep business in my pipeline, even during my time off from traveling and speaking. This was back in 2003. Here we are, fast forward 10 years. And I still use the marketing approaches he taught me back then to this day to keep my speaking calendar full and to keep my book sales as strong in their second year as they were in the first 6 months. And that's really what I want to share with everyone participating today.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm looking forward to that. So why don't we start by kind of just backing up a little bit and tell us, how do you think speaking can help writers? Because I think most of us get that we've got to write, we've got to submit our stuff, and we need to sell our stuff. But the whole idea of, like, actually leaving the house and putting on clothes and speaking, a little scary. So how can speaking help us as writers?
Well, I'm a business author, so the jump is pretty logical for me. But I have to tell you, if you've compiled a book of poetry, you have a speech. If you've written a short story, you have a speech. If you've published a cookbook, a collection of recipes, you have a speech. You have a lot of stories there. If you're a sci-fi writer, you have a speech, and you have a very specific audience to whom you can market it. And as you know, Rochelle, speaking is how I make my living. And I get paid a fee to speak, and I do practice fee integrity. That's one of the tenets of the National Speakers Association. A fee is a fee is a fee. You can't speak for X dollars at one audience and Y dollars at another. That's not fair and not right, just like we can't sell our books for $16 at one venue and $6 at another. So fee integrity is key, but once a month, and this is what Mark taught me, I give a free speech, zero free, to an audience of my choice every month. And this free speech has been the secret to book sales and, of course, speaking engagement bookings for the past 10 years.
Mm.
as we talk about this, I do want to encourage a lot of people not to fall back on a bad habit I see a lot of speakers do and call it a freebie. I have a lot of speaker friends who say, oh, I got to go give a freebie this afternoon, or I'm giving a freebie at lunch today. I think that devalues this practice because, as we all know, there's power in words. So it's not a freebie. It is a showcase opportunity. These free talks that you can give even in your neighborhoods, even in your towns, it's an opportunity for writers to showcase their writing talents and build the buzz about their book. That is one of the best techniques Mark LeBlanc taught me when I hired him back in 2003, to use showcase speaking opportunities to build my paid speaking business. I want to get in front of key decision makers in these free lunch opportunities so that they can hire me to come into their banks, to their firms, their engineering and architect firms, and actually do training and paid work for them. And just to encourage everyone, right now, for those of you taking notes, and I am a laborious note taker, I would encourage you off to the side of your notepad right now to start writing down any potential audiences you have for your books. This would include book clubs, church groups, school gatherings, alumni associations, civic groups throughout your towns. In fact, I'd probably list civic groups in the surrounding five counties. And just start writing down people who might be interested in your message. And any group is a great opportunity. The first showcase I did, and I was skeptical when Mark shared this with me, but the first showcase I did was to a Rotary Club in 2003 in DeSoto County, Mississippi, about 40 Rotarians there. And do you know, when I finished and walked out that door, I actually had three signed contracts for full fee speaking engagements. So this showcase technique really works, and any writer can use showcase opportunities to build the buzz and keep the buzz about their book or their published work.
Wow. So, okay, well, this leads to the next question, which is, how do you book speaking engagements to help sell your book? How do you make that transition from doing the freebies to doing the ones for money? Or how do you even get people who want you to do the freebies? I mean, it's like, please, please, I'll pay you to let me talk about my book, you know?
Oh, yeah. We come close to it, too. Well, here is the takeaway. Now, this is, like I said, this is the part where people want to roll up their sleeves and crack their knuckles, get close to their computer keypads to take notes, because I'm going to pass on to you the wisdom that Mark passed on to me, and I paid him thousands of dollars to help me with this leading up to the birth of my son, so, again, I could keep my speaking business thriving, even though I wasn't out on the road speaking for several months. And I'll give you some contact information for Mark at the end of the call, because I can't teach you what he taught me, but what I can do is I can share with you what I learned from him that's worked for me, in hopes that you can take it and apply it and make it work for you. What Mark taught me, in essence, is there really are 10 ways people can market their intellectual material. And for us, for me, my intellectual material, my speeches, the five topics I train on. But our intellectual material could include books, publications, whatever it is for you right now, that's what we're talking about. There are 10 ways, in essence, we can get the word out and market this. The magic, though, is in the mix. Because what I'm going to do is I'll give you these 10, and I do encourage you to write them down and take notes on them, and then I'll share with you this four-pronged marketing approach that Rochelle mentioned in the introduction that you can customize specifically for what will be most helpful for you. For me, I use this four-pronged marketing approach to book speeches and to prolong the life of my business book. But the key here is that whatever you choose, you have to do something once a month, every month. In fact, I almost want everyone to say that out loud right now. Once a month, every month. The key is the consistency. So here are the 10 that I learned from Mark. I'll give you these 10, and I'll share with you the four that I chose and how they work for me as a speaker and a writer. So here we go. All right, the first approach or technique we can use to market our intellectual material is the mail. Just basic direct mail. Direct mail pieces going out to our targeted audience, our potential buyers. if direct mail is a strategy you think would work very well for you, what you would do, and here's what I've done, is I have it posted on my wall. I have my four approaches posted in front of my wall so I can't avoid them. I see them every day. And you write it in the present tense. You say, I mail 500 postcards about my book once a month, every month. Or I mail 50 direct mail pieces about such and such once a month, every month to my target audience. Now, as you can imagine, direct mail is one of your more expensive options because you're paying for the postcard to be designed, you're paying for that promotional material, and you're paying to mail it. You're paying for the postage. So there are some pricing limitations to that, but direct mail is one of those approaches. The second, and here we go, cold calls. I know, telemarketing. But it is another way we can get the word out about our intellectual material. So if you decided that making phone calls would be one of the strategies you would want to use, you would write down, I make 50 calls a week about such and such. Or if your goal is, let's say, 200 calls a month, break it down and do 50 a week so you can make that happen. People are either going to love the telemarketing or hate the telemarketing. But Rochelle, you were sharing with me that someone you know uses this very well. Why don't you tell everyone about that?
I have a colleague. We've known each other for 15 years. She's a multi-book published author, and she makes her money doing speeches, and she calls every single week. She writes in the spiritual market, so she calls churches and women's groups and MOPS groups and other sorts of women's groups to get the word out, or, hey, I'm going to be in your area. I'd love to speak. These are my fees. So she gets a lot of speaking gigs that way.
Yeah, just getting on the telephone and making those calls. It's always good to hear people who are doing it and having success at doing it. That encourages us because it's really tough. But you mentioned it. She makes calls every week. And if she skipped a week, she would see that on her calendar at some point.
Yeah.
She would be able to tell it. So phone calls is another way to get the word out. All right, here's the third one. Networking opportunities. So if you chose networking as a way to get word out about your next work, your latest book, your latest manuscript, what that might look like in writing for you is I attend two networking events once a month, every month. It could be the same two groups that have monthly meetings, or it could be different groups each month, if that is one of your choices for marketing your wares. I have a speaker friend in Atlanta who he actually does four networking events a week. He uses networking as one of his primary strategies to get out, get his name known in his area. And, of course, Atlanta is large enough. He doesn't even have to leave the city to do this. And he books a lot of business through that. So networking is a third technique. But the fourth technique is trade shows and conferences, and I even add to that Writers Guild opportunities. Trade shows, conferences, Writers Guild. And so if this were a technique that you wanted to use, your strategy might word something like this. Exhibit at a trade show two times a year. I immediately think about people who may be in the science fiction genre with all the trade shows and opportunities there. How wonderful would it be to set up a booth and be present at some of those events with such avid fans? That could be a very good approach. You mentioned a friend who writes in the spiritual market. There may be some opportunities there for a very exact audience to set up a trade show booth and exhibit your book or whatever it is that you're marketing there. Again, I would have to say this is probably your most expensive marketing approach because it costs lots of money to set up trade show booths. But if you're wise about it and you just do it twice a year, you could probably get business for an entire year off of one trade show event. So that's the fourth one. All right, the fifth one is the one you know I am very biased about, and that's the showcase opportunity, the free speech, showcasing through speaking to various groups. And again, if that is yours, you might say, I give one free speech a month to such and such groups. If your book is going to be out in the next 6 months, you might want to up it and say, I give three showcase opportunities a month to various groups to get the word out. And of course, you never quit that, because these showcase opportunities become book selling opportunities once your book comes out. And we're definitely going to drill down into that. The sixth technique for marketing your work, print advertising. This is running ads in magazines, industry specific books or publications, print advertising. Again, there's some cost to that. I have tried it once, and I did not have a lot of success with it because it's hit or miss. I don't know that a print ad necessarily makes people say, wow, I have to go out and buy this book right now, as a speaking opportunity does, but it does work for some people. Number seven is the publicity approach to marketing. Number seven is publicity. This is a lot cheaper than print advertising, but your name is still seen in the print media and other opportunities, because this is where you write articles about your subject matter and you distribute them very liberally. You do shows, radio interviews. All of these add up to a good publicity strategy for getting your word out about your published work. Number eight, using blogs and e-zine. And, of course, we have someone hosting this call who is an expert at this, and that's Rochelle. So I'm wondering if you might tell us how you use your blog to spread the word about, you and I met when you were speaking at a conference. So how does your blog help you secure speaking engagements and, of course, help you increase your book sales as well?
Well, you know, I don't think I would have been at that conference if it weren't for my blog, because an organizer found me through my blog online and had never known me or my books prior to that. So I have been doing an e-zine since 2001 and the blog since, so it kind of transitioned into the blog in around 2005, 2006. So I think blogs and e-zines for me have been my number one marketing tool, not just for getting speaking gigs, but for getting clients. And my one piece of advice with this is be patient, because sometimes people have been on my list for 6 or 7 years before they decide to hire me to speak or hire me as their coach.
That's great. And it's giving you that nationwide publicity that you might not have otherwise. And that's the truth with all of these. With all of these, we have to be patient. A lot of people think, okay, I'll make 50 calls and I'll get 40 speaking engagements. No, you might think 500 before you get your first hit. But the key is once a month, every month. It all goes back to that advice. Be patient, do something with it, and you will see the fruits of your labors. All right, we have two left. Number nine is a social media campaign. This is where you wisely use Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and the various social media outlets. The key for this is consistency. You can't just get on Twitter. You can't just get on Twitter and tweet once every 2 weeks to your 16 followers and think that's going to help. But if you're consistent with you, not only you build your following, but you also are able to give people a sense of your style and what you talk about, and it's free. So it works very well, too. And then the 10th one is good old word of mouth. You cannot forsake or forget this one. I call it the referral strategy. It's where you intentionally create top-of-mind presence with those people who are special advocates of you, who absolutely love you, who would speak worlds of praise on your behalf, and are very good about spreading the word about the good work you do, who are fans of your work and share it with others. Word of mouth, quite frankly, beats anything on the internet any day of the week. So those are the 10. Let me go through them very quickly. Direct mail is number one. Phone calls / telemarketing. Networking. Trade shows, conferences, Writers Guild meetings. Number five is the showcase opportunity. Six, print advertising. Seven, publicity. Eight, blogs and e-zines. Nine, social media campaign. And 10, word of mouth or referral marketing.
That's great. I love it. So how does this relate to the four-pronged marketing approach?
Out of these, you can't do all of them. You don't want to do all of them. You wouldn't have time to write if you did all of these.
Yeah.
So what you do, and this, again, is Mark's advice. I'm just sharing with you what I learned from him. And, you know, if it hadn't been good information, I wouldn't still be doing it a decade later. This works, and it's so elementary. You would think, well, it's common sense for all of us, but it just works. Out of this list of 10, you pick the four that resonate with you. Some of you may already be looking at that list and circling four that you think, you know what, I could do that. I could start doing that next month. And we're approaching the first of the month. I can't think of a better time to list your four and write out exactly what you're going to do once a month, every month, and have it posted beautifully somewhere in your office where you see it going in and coming out of your office every day. I'll start by telling you the ones I don't do. I don't do the cold calling. I know it works for this speaker you mentioned to me. My problem with cold calling is a lot of times the calls are just cold. It's hard. So that's not my personal favorite. I've not used it. But again, it does work for some people. Another one I don't do is the print advertising. There's a lot of expense involved in that, and I'm not sure that you get the most bang for your buck, to use an old cliche there. The ones I've chosen, interestingly enough, don't cost much at all. So here are the four that I use. And, of course, you know, the first one I'm going to tell you is that showcase opportunity. When my book came out last year, I was already giving 3 free speeches a month. 3 free speeches a month to build the buzz before my book came out and, of course, to encourage sales after it came out. So the showcase opportunity is something we all can do. And it doesn't cost anything, and a lot of times you get a nice chicken lunch out of it. Now, the second one I use is the networking. I attend 2 networking events or networking opportunities every month. Number 3 is the publicity technique. I submit guest blogs. I write articles. I've done several radio interviews, news stories. Whenever I'm in a new market, I try to hit the media outlets there. So publicity, again, is one that doesn't cost me anything. It just takes a little time. And then the fourth one I use is the word of mouth or referral strategy, where I have a list of about 20 people who I would call advocates of my work. And I know that if anyone were to bring up my name or something I've done in a group setting and they were there, they would sing my praises to the other people and would just be a great advocate on my behalf. And I reward those efforts too. If I ever get a booking engagement from someone who has just mentioned, well, you know, Mandy Stanley teaches this topic, you should call her, I reward them by giving them 10% of my speaking fee. I figure I would have paid that much for marketing efforts anyway, so I reward them with either a gift card or a nice check for 10% of my fee, and you'll find once you do that a few times, people really start spreading your name in your area, so it works well. Now, and here's another thing that some people have questions about when I talk about this. What about hiring a publicist or a public relations firm to help with this? Now, I will tell you, I've heard a lot of speaker friends, and you know, Rochelle, you're a much more experienced author than I am with your publications, but for my first book, I had so many people tell me of bad experiences they had when working with a publicist or a PR firm. I think if you go into a marketing firm or a public relations firm with your four-pronged marketing approach marked out for them and you share it with that person who will be working on your behalf so you're both on the same page, I think your opportunities will blossom. Because they're not just doing some cookie-cutter approach to getting word out about you. You have the same strategy. So maybe if you don't like making the cold calls, you share with your publicist that you want to make 50 calls a week to people who have the power to either hire you to speak or to invite you to do a book reading. And that's where you and your publicist can work hand in hand in a very successful fashion because you're both working off of that same 4-pronged marketing plan. So I definitely would use that for those of you who don't have the time to do 50 cold calls a week. Or for maybe some people who need help with that publicity strategy to get someone to call some of the news outlets and schedule talk shows and radio interviews for you. That's one way I think you can find a lot of value in working with a PR firm or a publicist.
I think that's good advice. So I want to go back to the showcase strategy because I think, you know, it's hard to understand how does the showcase strategy help us either sell books or get more speaking gigs? How is it not just that bad word you mentioned before, a freebie?
Okay. Well, first of all, your showcase has to be strategic. So I'm going to make kind of an abrupt statement here, but I don't give a free speech to people who can't hire me. And I don't want that to sound snarky at all because that's the last thing I would mean it to be, but you have to be strategic. I get calls to speak a lot, and there are just some that I can't manage to do for free because I'm not going to see any spinoff from that speaking engagement. Now, what I do, and I don't like telling people no, but what I usually do is if I'm not available to speak, I will at least refer someone else. I have a mastermind group of about 9 speakers here in Mississippi, and we all specialize in different topics. So if I have to say no, I say, I'm not available to speak for you, but let me recommend someone who will do a good job for you. And that way it's a win-win because, you know, they're struggling to find a speaker. Either, you know, with Rotary Clubs, it's a once-a-week speaker they're looking for, or a lot of places they The worst job on any board of directors of an association is the event planner because you have to find speakers for all of these meetings. And I want to make it as easy as possible for people to find good speakers who would help their audiences. So if I have to say no because it's not a good fit for me, I at least help them find someone who can say yes. Now, again, that list you have is invaluable, and keep adding to it in the next 2 or 3 days of people who you would consider your target audience for free speeches. But for the past 2 years, my showcase opportunities have been more about my book sales than they really have been my speaking business. So let me answer your question by sharing with you just a couple of ways you can really leverage the showcase opportunities to either get invited to speak for a fee or to at least sell more books while you're there on site. And these are just some helpful practical techniques. For instance, if you have a handout, one section of that handout should be with all of your contact information where you list your different presentations. So let's say you have 2 presentations starting out. You put them there. You give them a chance to fill in their contact information. And you ask them if you would be interested in inviting Mandy Stanley in to speak for your group. Check here and make sure you hand this to Mandy before you leave. So you can't just expect people to come up and say, hey, we need you to come in and speak to us next September. But if you give that to them, that plants the seed in their mind. You have all of their contact information, and so you have a strategy for going back to your office and making those calls and securing those speaking engagements that way. So you have all of that listed on your handout. You have your valuable content, but you also have this seed that you can come in and do this for them for a set fee. So that's one way you can leverage a showcase opportunity. For books, if your talk is about your book, go ahead and put 2 books at each table where people might be having lunch or having their meeting or setting up. Now, a lot of people say, well, if they look through my book, they may decide they don't want to buy it. Well, I hope that's not the case. I hope because you have it there and they can thumb through it, it makes them even more intrigued to buy it. Of course, you're going to have a book table set up at this showcase opportunity, but have the books on the table as well. And if you really want to make sure you have some sales, book sales, you can even tell people toward the end, I'll be at the front of the room to sign books for you. And by the way, I have some table copies out. And if you want one of those table copies, I will sell that to you and sign it for half price because people have been looking through it. Just some sort of special there. And I guarantee you people will fight over the table copies and come up and get you to sign them and buy your books because they've had their hands on them. They've looked at it. It's tactile. You're involving the kinesthetic learners in the room. And you know, depending on how many books you have at the tables, people will grab those books and they'll come up and they'll want to buy them. It's up to you if you want to do it for half price or $2 off, whatever it might be for you. That's a great way you can encourage book sales at these showcase opportunities. All right, here's another idea for people. Location, location, location. You are giving people a gift of providing a nice presentation for them, and you're not charging them. It's free. As a result, you need to take ownership of the room. So if they have stuck your book table in the back corner that no one is going to walk by on their way out, get there early and move that table to a more strategic location. I always want my table by the front door where people have to walk past it coming in and almost have to trip over it going out. And as long as I'm not breaking any fire codes, I get it as close to that doorway as I possibly can. Again, nothing wrong with doing that. You don't want to violate any fire codes, but always set that table by that door so people do have to stop by and talk to you, see you, or pass you by before they go out. And again, that's just another way you can leverage these showcase opportunities to get more book sales and encourage people to call you about more business.
Oh, God, this is exciting. I love this idea.
And I'll tell you, I'll give you an example here, too. I am a Rotarian. I did a lot of these free talks to Rotary clubs when my book first came out and just had a lot of success there. So I want to encourage you. But I am a Rotarian, and so I have a Rotary club in my county, and we have about 50 people, so it's a fairly small group. We have about 50 people who attend, and about 2 months ago, a poet from about 3 hours away up in northeast Mississippi, close to Tupelo, for those of you familiar with your Mississippi geography, she drove all the way down and did a 20-minute Rotary Club talk to our group, and all she did was open up her first collection of poetry, and she read some selected poems. That was her presentation. It was that easy. She stood up, and she shared with us 7 or 8 wonderfully, beautifully written selected poems. She closed and sat down, and I want you to know she sold out of books. Like I said, if you have a book, you have a speech. If you have a short story, you have a speech. The hardest part is getting the audience, but when you're volunteering to do it for free, you'll be amazed at the doors that will open up for you. So she had, even though she drove 3 hours to speak and 3 hours back, she had people buying them as gifts for people. It was close to, it was close to Thanksgiving, so she had people buying her books as Thanksgiving happies. And of course, she planted that seed for them to do that. Don't assume people just automatically go there. Plant that seed, but she sold out of books. That was a very productive trip for her.
Wow. So I know you have strong opinions about back-of-room sales. What should we know about back-of-room sales and be prepared for?
Okay. Well, and you're right. I do have a strong opinion about it. And my strong opinion is about calling them back-of-the-room sales.
Oh.
Again, because we as writers on our call know the power of words. When you think about something stuck in the back of the room or it's in the back of the room, it's kind of a discard. It's a reject. It's of secondary importance. So what I teach people who work with me, don't call it back of the room. Don't say at the end of your presentation, I'll be in the back of the room at the book table to sign books. No, all you have to do, the table may be in the same spot, but instead of calling that spot the back of the room, call it the front of the room. You want to have that front of the room mentality. So don't say, I'll be in the back of the room to sign books. Say, I will meet you at the front of the room to help you with the books and to sign as many copies as you would like. It's just changing that language from back of the room sales to a front of the room presence, because the good stuff's at the front of the room. And, of course, your book is what I would consider good stuff. You don't want them to miss it.
And should we know anything? Should we be prepared for having extra change or being able to take credit cards? What? How do you deal with all that stuff?
Right. And yes. So you for and I'll tell you what I do, because with tax it makes my book a very odd amount. What I do is I round to an even number, so I'm not having to count 18 cents out of the cash bag. So I just round it down to an even number, and I just take care of paying the extra tax myself just to make it easy to do business. Very few people travel with cash, so at the very least, they may hand you a $20 bill and need you to make change if that's the case. So I have plenty. What I do is I sell my book for an even $15 at a place, and people live and breathe a $20 bill. So people always have a 20 on them. So they'll hand me a 20, and I just have a stack of fives that I am prepared to give them as I sign that book. Credit cards, yes, I do accept credit cards. And the good news, and I'll go ahead and share with you names. I use Square. I use Square on my phone to make it very easy to accept credit cards, and there are no additional banking fees. Rochelle, my first year the book came out, I used another service. I was eaten up with fees. The first of the month, this credit card acceptance company would just take $53 out of my account every month.
Wow.
Even if I hadn't sold $53 in credit card sales for that month. And it just seemed to go up every month. So I finally said enough is enough, and I had been very pleased with that Square. You know, you go to squareup.com, and you can use it with your iPad, which is what I do. You can put it on your phone. You set up your bank account. They do take 2.75%, but it's just that one fee one time. You don't get all these additional bank fees. And I made the choice to accept personal checks. Some people may not want to. That is up to you. But, again, I make it as easy as possible for people to get a copy of my book.
That's great. Well, now I want to get to the question that I know everybody on the line is wanting to ask you, which is, what if we're a little freaked out? You know, I think that there's the old joke that statistically we'd rather be the person in the casket than the person giving the eulogy, because we're more afraid of speaking in public than we are of dying. So what
That's
kind of
a Jerry
advice?
Seinfeld joke, isn't it?
It is. So what is the advice that you can give to those of us who freak out about public speaking? What can we do to make it easier on ourselves, but also easier on our audience? Because nobody wants to listen to someone who's having a panic attack.
No one wants to come into the room. I say this in my book. No one wants to come into the room and see the speaker cowering, trembling over in the corner. I mean, you don't want to see a nervous speaker for sure. And make no mistake. Fear of public speaking is the number one fear in the United States, no doubt about it. In fact, this past year, the American Management Association tells us that the number one fear is fear of speaking in public, the number two fear is fear of heights, and the number three fear is fear of snakes and spiders. So there you see what kind of company public speaking keeps. And so when I wrote my book last year, I had the people group in mind, the people who are not as at ease in front of an audience. And I think sometimes smaller audiences are more nerve-wracking than larger groups. So chapter N of the No Panic Plan for Presenters is the chapter I titled Nick's Nervousness. And if you want, I will just share a couple of practical ideas to help people get over that fear. And, of course, The best cure is experience. The more we do it, the better we are, the less nervous we are. But I list some techniques to prepare yourself mentally and emotionally, and then also to prepare yourself physically. So under the mental and emotional category, and I've titled this Turning Panic into Poise, the first bit of advice I give people is to remember, it is not about you at all. It's about your audience. And I think if you come from a place where you're sharing a gift with your audience and that it's all about them and not about you, it makes it a little bit easier. Remember, they've invited you to speak because you know something they don't know. You are a subject matter expert, and they are going to pick up at least one brand new idea from you that they've never heard before. So it's all about them. And I think having that healthy mindset going in is very helpful because you can turn that panic feeling into more of a poised presentation. Also, I encourage people to remember you're among friends. Rochelle, you're right. No one wants to hear a bad speaker. They want you to do well. They're not there cheering against you or picking out every flaw in your presentation. They're expecting a good presentation, and so they're on your side there. I think another helpful hint to prepare yourself emotionally is to get to know the people who will be there. You know, Zig Ziglar passed away a couple of months ago, and in 1997, I got to share the stage with him in Kansas City. It's one of the highlights of my speaking career. And I'll tell you what, Zig, as well-known a speaker as he was at that conference center 1 hour early at the door greeting people and shaking their hands as they came in. That personal touch. I mean, there were thousands of people there, and yet he made the time to meet as many one-on-one as he personally could. So if you know some people in your audience, it makes it a lot easier to present. And even some of the best speakers and the biggest named speakers you know still practice that today. Another idea is to pinpoint the root cause of your fear. I mean, what are you actually afraid of? Are you afraid of looking bad, of losing your place? Are you afraid of a person in your audience, malfunctioning equipment? Most of these are genuine concerns, and there's always going to be a proactive solution. So figure out what is it that's really making me nervous and do what you can to tackle that. Physically, and I think this is some of the most practical advice I can share, is that nervous energy shows up and manifests itself in various forms and formats, one of which is if you're holding paper in your hands and your hands are shaking, Well, what are people immediately going to focus on? The shaking paper in your hand. So don't hold anything. If you have the shakes, just don't hold anything. Don't have that paper. Your laser pointer is going to be shivering. You are trembling. So make a point to not have something in your hands where it really shows you have the shakes. That almost magnifies it. And to get rid of those shakes, here we go. It's a lot of excess energy. You know, athletes call it adrenaline, and athletes want it. It helps them play their A game. And we want it as speakers, too, but you want to be able to channel it from being nervous energy to very natural energy. And the best way I know to tell people to do that is if right before your speech, hide somewhere, go in the restroom, and jog up and down really fast for a couple of minutes to get that excess energy out of your body. You would be shocked at how just working up a little bit of a sweat before you go on stage makes a big difference. A veteran seminar speaker I worked with many years ago for this seminar firm, I caught him at a Holiday Inn at a conference we were at. He was running the stairwell at this Holiday Inn right before he went into the training room. I said, Joel, what in the world are you doing? And he was running the stairs so he could get rid of some of those butterflies and calm himself just by getting rid of that excess energy. And I'll tell you, it works. And I had a friend who said she was interviewing for a new job, and she said, Mandy, I went in the restroom, and I jogged up and down for a few minutes really fast. She said, I wish you could have been there to see me. I hope no one else came in and wondering what in the world I was doing. But she even did that before a job interview just to get rid of some of those excess nerves. And, of course, for me personally, I pray before every presentation, even the free ones. And one of my verses that I actually, you know, pray back to God before I go on stage is Psalm 19:14, which is simply this. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing and acceptable to you, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. And I do that every time because ultimately I want to, you know, make sure what I'm doing is of service to the people who need to hear it most.
That's great. So here's one of the questions that I think everybody thinks about, which is, it's the chicken and the egg question. It's, so should I publish my book before I start speaking, or, oh, shoot, should I have been speaking before I publish my book? You know, what should I be doing first, and how can I make those work with each other?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I've heard some heated arguments and disagreements about that one question, Rochelle, especially at the National Speakers Association meetings. And I will tell you, people come down 50-50 on that. Quite frankly, I probably did it backward. I was speaking 15 years before my first book came out. And so what many people do, and most experts would agree, is that you write the book and you gain some acclaim from the book, and that's when you're invited to do more and more speaking. But, of course, it works both ways. If you start speaking before your book comes out, you have that presence in your area of expertise. And, of course, you want to speak after it comes out because that only enhances your book sales. So I think it's not really an either-or question. I think it's a both-or question.
I think that's good. Well, I want to open up the line for questions. We're kind of we have just 10 minutes left on the call, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody, since I did mute a lot of you. If you want to stay muted, you can go ahead and push *6, but I'm unmuting you. So if you have a question, please feel free to step up and ask Mandy now. We have a time for a few questions, so go ahead. Whoever would like to ask a question, go ahead and pipe up. And if you don't have a question, I have questions, so you don't have to worry. So, does anybody have a question for Mandy?
I have one.
Go ahead.
Okay, please go ahead.
I would like to know, when you first started out, how did you find the speaking engagements in the first place? Were you looking on specific sites or relevant to your business, or how did you begin to find those engagements, even the free ones?
Oh, sure. And, you know, I did have to start at zero. When I finished my contract with the seminar firm, I had signed a non-compete with them. So I had spoken to a lot of people, in fact, thousands of people through that. I could not approach any of them who had heard me before for spinoff business there because those were the seminar company's clients. They were not mine, and I would not dare take their clients from them, if that makes sense. So I had signed a non-compete with them, and just ethically I would not have done that anyway. So I really was starting at zero. And to answer your question, I used that four-pronged marketing approach. I started by used the word of mouth to let people know that this is what I was doing now. I published articles in business journals. I used that publicity approach to get my name out in my market area. And I did start giving free speeches to Rotary clubs and other civic organizations where there were business leaders in attendance. And that really is the number one way I launched my seminar firm. And so that's why I encourage people on the call, start listing some of the civic organizations that might be in your five-county area and start calling those folks. They are always looking for speakers. And that's how, like I said, that very first one was so encouraging to me because I got three paid speaking engagements off of that one free 20-minute speech. I know that sounds so simple, but it really is that easy. And if I could share one other bit of advice for you starting off as a speaker or someone who's written and wants to speak more, when people call me to mentor them in my area, one of the best bits of advice I can share with them is to speak 100 times for free before you even start marketing your paid services. And I know that sounds crazy, but you know, a couple of speakers I know, they've started with anyone who would listen, library associations. And you would be surprised because at about the 25th or 30th speech, people are going to start inviting you to speak to their friends. By the time you get to 100 free speeches, you don't even have to give the free speech anymore because you've built such a wealth of contacts from those who can hire you to come in and speak for them. That showcase opportunity is, I would almost go so far as to say it is fail-safe. And you just have to start with a list and start calling and getting in front of audiences, school groups, if you have a university in your area, every department there that might benefit from your message. There are just so many opportunities. It just takes putting pen to paper, listing them, and then going after those speaking opportunities. And that's how I launched it a decade ago when I had to start running my own business so that I could be home more with my children. And it really does work.
And I think I'll just add to that. I think if you can, you know, better your target marketing by thinking, who are the people who are going to be my ideal audience for my book or my topic? And look for people, places where they get together, you know. Because I'm sure there's lots, if you're a sci-fi writer, there's science fiction groups that meet in your city. There's science fiction reading groups and book groups and so forth. So you can connect more deliberately that way.
Exactly. Have that list. You'll be adding to it. Professional associations. I've done a lot of free speeches for human resources associations or public relations associations. Pretty much every industry has an association, and they all have monthly meetings, and they all need a free speaker at those meetings.
Yep. Perfect. Other questions from the group? And if you're shy and don't want to ask questions, you can go ahead and push star 6 to mute yourself. But if you're sitting back there thinking, oh, I really want to ask Mandy, ask. Anybody have any questions? So Mandy, I do. What about those of us who want to use our book to launch a speaking career? How can we do that? Or do you have any specific hints for doing that?
I will go back to the answer for that last question. Once you have your book, you write the speech. And what I mean is you take the best of the best from your book and you put together a presentation in a 20-minute format and then probably a one-hour format, because your showcase opportunities are usually going to be 20-minute presentation opportunities. So those need to be really tight and very well practiced. And then when you're invited to do more keynoting or to speak in an association event or go into a school and speak, usually they're going to slot an hour for that. So you want to have two versions. You want to have the 20-minute version. You want to have the one-hour version. And you work on that presentation. And you typically, and I'll even get into how you title it, you probably want to give it the same title as your book, so that there's that branding present, that your speech is your book and your book is your speech, and that just helps reinforce what your message is to people. There are also two types of presentations. You have action presentations and informative presentations. I'd go so far to say is when you're speaking at an engagement where they're paying you, that's more of an informative presentation where you have your main point and you're using a lot of examples from your book to drive that home. When you're doing a showcase opportunity, that's an action presentation because for you, you want to share information that's going to get them to the next step that may encourage them to contact you to speak for them, or at the very least, the action step is for them to come to the front of the room and buy your book when you're finished. So you can use your book really as that launch for your speaking career, and the two go hand in hand.
Wow, that's great. Well, we're at the end of our time. I want to remind everybody that your book is called The No Panic Plan for Presenters, an A to Z checklist for speaking confidently and compellingly anywhere, anytime. When I send out the link to the recording, I'll be sending out a link to Mandy's website and her book again, and I'll send out a link to her business consultant's information with the same email. So I'll have that all for you probably a little bit later in the week. Mandy, do you have a final piece of wisdom for our audience?
Not a final piece of wisdom, but I definitely want to give credit where credit is due. I would probably not be doing what I'm doing today had I not hired Mark LeBlanc many years ago. And I wanted to let you know that Mark runs a company called Small Business Success, and that he actually wrote a book that I have read 5 times to help me, and it's a book called Growing Your Business. So those of you who want to maybe look into that, not that you want to hire Mark as a consultant, but you want to get some of the wisdom from his book, it's a little book called Growing Your Business. It's a quick executive tips book. You can read it in one sitting, and it absolutely revolutionized my approach to my speaking enterprise.
Oh, that's great. I will include both a link to your book and his book and your site and his site in my call when I send this out. So everybody, I want to thank you for attending. This has been the Right Now Mastermind class with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach, and our wonderful guest has been Mandy Stanley. Mandy, thank you so much for being here.
This was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And I so appreciate it, Mandy, and I will be sending the recording out later this week. Everybody, have a great day, and go make those connections for speaking. Take care. Bye-bye, everyone.